Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran Learning. issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
We had to pretend to be buyers of these parts. And so some would say, well, you're lying.
I think that undercover work is actually fundamentally different from lying, because the purpose of undercover work is actually to serve the truth.
Coming out does not require as much courage as is required by a person who says, you know, I feel same-sex attraction, but what I want to do is not act on it. What I want to do is live up to my church's teaching.
All I know is that I'm died for by Jesus. I'm baptized and I'm forgiven, and God, I am the possessor of God's promises and His kingdom and His Spirit and His life, and that is who I am. So I don't have to love myself. Jesus loves me.
Wisconsin snowplow drivers love issues, etc.
Usually, when a pope makes a statement, it is considered of such gravity. They come in the form of encyclicals, that is, official statements from the pope that are considered to be, well, to carry the authority some ascribe to the papal office. Now, the latest pope, Pope Francis, is a more off-the-cuff kind of a pope. He speaks casually with reporters. He speaks in an unguarded way with people and with the media. And he also makes statements that are not exactly encyclicals, but they are papal statements, and he made one recently on the occasion of the 50th World Communications Day. It was released at the same time as a private meeting between the Pope and the Apple CEO Tim Cook. What was it about? It was about social media. It was about how we deal with one another on social media. And although he didn't use the word, it was about trolling on social media as well. Welcome back to Issues Etc. Live this Thursday afternoon, January the 28th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to be talking about Pope Francis's recent comments about social media, internet communities, and trolling. Terry Mattingly will join us here in just a moment. A little bit later, we will continue our series, Christ in the Old Testament. We'll be in Jeremiah chapter 1, the call of Jeremiah. Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer will be our guest host of a weekly radio talk show called Redeemer Theological Academy. Joining us to talk about Pope Francis's recent statement about social media, internet communities, and trolling, Terry Mattingly, a regular guest, senior fellow for media and religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate, and founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Glad to be here.
Do we know why Francis addressed this particular issue of how we deal with one another on the internet and social media?
Well, I think it's important to look at it at two levels. First of all, he does like an annual letter to Catholic communicators and world communicators every year. So issues of journalism and stuff like that, and even entertainment media and movies and things, it is not unusual for a pope to talk about that. I mean, so this is not strange territory or unprecedented territory. I think it's also crucial to understand that the Pope's social media profile is just massive, and he has to be aware of this. I mean, I have no idea. I've heard cardinals and archbishops in the past talk about the astonishing disconnect between people inside the Vatican and the very lively, very opinionated, very driven Catholic blogosphere, just how out of it the Vatican officials are. But I've gotten the impression in recent years, especially with the advent of Twitter, that that wall is breaking down, and it certainly seems to have broken down, within the last papacy or two. When you look at Francis online, just I'll give you a relevant statistic. I've called up the English account for Pope Francis on Twitter, and it's, you know, he's going to hit 9 million followers pretty quick. And I have no idea, I guess I could find that out pretty quickly, but I have no idea how big his Spanish channel is. But when you look at Spanish population in the world, wouldn't you assume that his Twitter following in Spanish is probably somewhere similar? Then you throw in Italian, the actual land of Italy, and you can take it from there. So who knows what his digital footprint is? Now, I have no idea who is actually following Twitter for him or who charts, you know, what happens to a papal selfie. And, of course, this is the first pope in the papal selfie world, has made almost a point of that. At a lot of major events, you end up with these pictures of the pope. He also is media savvy when it comes to, shall we call them photo ops that don't look like photo ops. He's almost in Ronald Reagan territory in that sense. So it's normal for him to be concerned about this. However, the current letter is dominated by the fact that he has become the latest pope to declare a jubilee year of mercy. And so the pope is running through a series of topics related to people showing kindness, grace, and mercy to each other. Now, he does not use the word troll in the letter that came out. And by the way, the letter came out the same day, that, or at least was made public, and people began noticing it on the same day that he had a private meeting with the CEO of Apple, Tim Cook. So there's your photo that goes with stories on this event. So he clearly is concerned about the level of internet discourse and talks about it in very Vatican language. He doesn't use the word troll, for example, but it's there. That's what he's talking about. So on one level, he made it much more specific than in the past, but it's a topic he's dealt with before.
What exactly, I mean, how would you distill what he had to say in this communication on the 50th World Communications Day?
Well, let me tell you what he had to say, and then I'll tell you what's, if I were granted an interview with the Pope on this topic, what's the first follow-up question I would ask. What he had to say is never, ever forget the humanity of other people with whom you are in communication, even on the internet. Now, the internet, its strengths and weaknesses are often the same. And part of the problem, and anyone who's ever tried to monitor comments on a website, as I have for more than a decade, you know that the anonymity of the internet is the source both of a lot of the freedom and strength of the medium, yet anonymity is also what makes its worst personality quirks possible. You throw in the emotional nature of the topic of religion, and all of a sudden you can find yourself involved in exchanges of the most stunning levels of vitriol and pompous sanctity all at the, you know, within lines of each other. Religion just seems to bring out the best and the worst, and especially if you're writing on anything that is related to religion and politics, or especially religion and sexuality. This is where the long knives come out. So you're trying to separate. I'm sure you have enough contact with the public through radio and your websites to know this. You're trying to separate people who are asking sincere questions versus the people who are simply attempting to cause emotional havoc, you know, in whatever conversation they're a part of, which is where we get this word troll.
So what would your questions be if you had your audience?
I was going to say my follow-up question.
Yeah.
My follow-up question would be, how would the Pope ask us to deal mercifully with people who have no interest in actual kind, constructive human contact? At Get Religion, we have quite a few readers who are atheists, who are pagans, and there are people out there who are more than willing to provide URLs for content that they think we should discuss, or to point us toward stories that they think are lousy jobs of covering their community of faith or not of faith. And all of that's wonderful. We have other people that, I mean, every single email I write to them, I'm tempted to begin with the phrase, "Did you really read the post?" I mean, which is a cruel thing to say. Did you actually read the post? But, of course, their comment has almost nothing to do with what I actually said in the post. A common theme is, someone will call back and say, "Oh, it's so sad how you pitiful right-wing conservative Christians are just living in the past when it comes to science and sex." Well, that's a typical comment, distilled down to its essence. And I write back, "I'm sorry, the post I wrote was actually about a New York Times story in which only one side of a debate over the Catholic Church and sexuality was presented. I'm merely saying it would be good journalism if both sides of this argument were covered." The person then writes back, "It's so horrible how stupid you guys are, and you're living in the past, and nobody should ever be forced to listen to you anyway." You know, at which point I write back and say, "What part of the post concerns you? Or is there anything in my post that indicates that I don't want the liberal side of this argument to be treated in a fair, accurate, and responsible manner, as well as voices on the conservative side?" At which point they stop. The dialogue only gets that far. Now, the question I would ask the Pope is, how would he want people to deal in mercy or kindness with trolls, with people who are not interested in actual communication? At the very first sign of a troll, do you just say, "Thank you very much, but I won't be responding"? I've talked to numerous Catholic commentators and others that's their basic response. In the words of the anchoress, Elizabeth Scalia, "I never resort to punching down." And so she, you know, just, you. But are we supposed to ignore them? Do you not answer at all? That's the question I would ask. How do you show mercy and kindness and recognize the humanity of people whose opening gambit is to totally deny your humanity or logic, sanity, professionalism, etc.?
Well, from what you know about Francis, what would you guess his response would be?
I really don't have a clue. I think he would prefer just some sort of initial kind response, and then saying, "If you actually want to discuss the contents of the Pope, I'd be glad to do so. Post, I would be glad to do so." I'm reminded of something that Steve Waldman, someone who's been in the Obama administration on communications issues and as an internet specialist and others, and he was the founder of BeliefNet, which still is around, BeliefNet.com. Years ago, Steve did a wonderful job of distilling the difficulties of dialogue online about doctrine, and especially religious doctrines that, shall we say, play for keeps, serious stuff, life and death, eternal life and death sorts of issues. And he had a funny way of putting it. He said that he had an informal rule at BeliefNet, that at BeliefNet you were allowed in a comment to say, "According to the doctrines of my faith, I believe that what you're saying is in error, and I believe that you may be headed to hell." In other words, you're allowed to say that there are eternal consequences to religious beliefs and doctrines. Otherwise, you have to, censor most of the believers in the world who are part of religions like Islam and traditional Christianity, who believe that there really are eternal consequences of actions in this life. You either eliminate them, you either silence them in dialogues, or you say that they must be able to state that at least in a kind manner. Waldman said what he won't allow when looking through comments. He said, "You're not allowed to say, according to the doctrines of my faith, I believe that what you're saying is in error, and I believe you may be headed to hell, and I would like to assist in that process as soon as possible to make it possible for you to begin the journey immediately, if you get the point. You know, he was trying to say that you can't stop religion from saying some pushy, edgy, and scary things from the viewpoint of people on the other side of arguments, but that you can say we're not going to make threats here. And I would argue at Get Religion, We Stress, and you're also not allowed to call people names. You're not allowed to just shout at people. Be interested, though, in knowing what the Pope would say.
Is it a... And many have noted that things are said, written, and asserted and argued on social media and the internet that if the persons involved in the conversation had to sit across the table from one another, would never get said.
So, I think that that's true. But in the world of religion, personally, have you ever attended, say, a March for Life event?
Yes.
Have you ever watched encounters between protesters and counter-protesters?
Yes, I think I have.
Yeah, so there are constructive dialogues that occur in those settings, but there's also just a lot of screaming, and it's really hard, and it takes a tremendous amount of discipline to not get involved in a shouting match coming out of some of the issues that we've seen. Sure, I mean, a lot of our listeners will have seen videos where, let's say, there are less than smooth street preachers on college campuses preaching on sexuality issues and have watched encounters between them and gay demonstrators, and how quickly those things, face-to-face encounters, can turn into screaming matches that often end up with police being summoned. Well, in the internet, what you're saying is absolutely true. You have all of that, but without the face-to-face encounter, which makes it easier to just scream. And it's not horribly constructive.
Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about Pope Francis's recent comments about social media, internet communities, and trolling. More with him right after this.
Even if your child has mild to moderate autism, learning disabilities, attention difficulties, or other learning challenges, he can receive a classical Christian education. The Simply Classical curriculum was created by Issues Etc. guest Cheryl Swope, an author, educator with a master's degree in special education, and homeschooling mother of twins with special needs. The Simply Classical curriculum has become an answer to prayer for parents and schools. Visit classicalspecialneeds.com and save $5 with the coupon code LPR.
You'll find descriptions of real events and actual confessions of demonic encounters in the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for January, Afraid, Demon Possession and Spiritual Warfare in America. It's written by Issues Etc. regular guest Dr. Robert Bennett. Afraid is published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040, or browse before you buy at issuesetc.org. Afraid, Demon Possession and Spiritual Warfare in America.
Quality, quantity, qualified. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Deaconesses are women trained to share the gospel of Jesus Christ through works of mercy, spiritual care, and teaching of the Christian faith. The word deaconess means servant. Find out more on how you can serve in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod through the vocation of deaconess at lcms.org/deaconess. Working in faith, laboring in love, remaining steadfast in the hope of our Lord Jesus Christ. LCMS Deaconess Ministry, lcms.org/deaconess.
Standing Firm in a Hostile World is the theme of the San Antonio Biblical Worldview Conference, February 5th and 6th. This confessional Lutheran conference features Issues Etc. guest Adam Francisco, David J. Weber, Joe Abrahamson, attorney Mark Stern, and Professor Alan Quist. If you are in Texas or would like some warmer weather in February, check out the San Antonio Biblical Worldview Conference, February 5th and 6th at faithlutheransa.org. faithlutheransa.org. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. On this Thursday afternoon, the 28th of January, we're talking with Terry Mattingly of the On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate about Pope Francis's recent comments about social media, internet communities, and trolling. Before the break, we were talking about how this is what happens face-to-face is vastly different than what happens in internet communities and social media, Terry. But are we, in a sense, comparing the worst of one thing, that is what the worst of what happens on the internet, with the very best of what could happen if we sat down face-to-face? You sit in a coffee shop, you keep your voice down because you don't want to disturb the other customers. But what you have done there is you've taken this conversation in your last comment there out of the coffee shop onto the street to talk about how people actually deal with one another in the case of protests. And it looks a lot like what happens online. Is that a better comparison of apples to apples?
Yeah, it's but I think it's important to realize the sense of disappointment that exists for many journalists and internet professionals, in that, as I'm old enough to know, that you know, when we entered the internet era, one of the primary things that journalists thought was going to be a strength of the medium was its interactivity and its ability to allow reporters to interact with people, to get fresh perspectives, to get valid information about topics that you don't know much about. What nobody expected was for that to turn into, you know, an avalanche of email every day from a publicly listed email address. Can you imagine if you covered social issues or the Supreme Court or presidential politics at the New York Times or USA Today and you had a publicly posted email address? Can you imagine the deluge of mail you would get every day?
Oh, gosh.
And what percentage of it would be constructive? So on one level, journalists are disappointed at kind of a functional level, which is that it's just like the medium didn't work. You're trying to put too much stuff through a tiny hole, which is your own time and your own attention span and your own ability to take stuff seriously. On the second level, there's been a sense of grief or disappointment at how little of the contact is constructive. Now, I know people who have written blogs for a decade or plus. Let's take Rod Dreher, for example. Cherishes the material that comes from his readers. He has tremendous readers, and he frequently, with their permission, will post, you know, 400, 500, 600 word excerpts from these serious letters that they write him. Yet at the same time, I know him well enough to know, I can't even imagine what percentage of his job is going through that email every day and trying to find those jewels amid the barrage of broken bricks being thrown at him. We don't get anywhere near as much email on the journalism topics we deal with at Get Religion. But I look at the comments day after day after day, and I can tell you that I probably publish about one out of six comments as having anything to do with the actual content of our blog and what we're working with. Everything else is people essentially shouting about their pet issue. And like I said, I don't think it's too strong a word to say that a lot of journalists are grieved that what they thought was going to be a positive element of the internet era has not turned out to be that way.
With only about a minute here, what are the chances that the media interpret Francis's gentle papal admonition in the statement as kind of fitting him into their template and say, look, he's telling Christians to tone it down on the internet and keep their opinions to themselves.
Yeah, that's possible. At the same time, of course, like with any Francis document, he says in several cases, this does not mean that we should not stand up for our faith, or this does not mean that there are people in error and that we must show mercy in their error so that they have some chance to change. He says that, and the column I wrote this week for Universal stresses that. As always with Francis, it is possible to selectively quote him and have him just fit your template. I think, sadly, it's highly unlikely that since this particular letter doesn't have anything to say about sexuality or the stuff we like in our headlines, tragically, I don't think many people will hear about this document or have a chance to read it. And I think it's very short, it's very to the point, and I wish that people would take the time to read it. And I'm going to post a direct link to it when the column goes up at my own site, tmat.net.
Terry Mattingly is a senior fellow for media and religion at the King's College in New York City. He is author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate, and he's founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, thanks.
Thank you.
When we come back, Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer will join us for our regular weekly series, Christ in the Old Testament Today, Jeremiah Chapter 1, The Call of Jeremiah. Stay tuned. Do you have a hard time finding Christian greeting cards and gifts that aren't either sappy or theologically suspect? Ad Crucem offers the perfect combination of art and the truth of the Scriptures with beautiful and reverent greeting cards and gifts. Deliver the true comfort of the gospel, Christ crucified for sinners, to family and friends with Ad Crucem. ADCRUCEM.com. Confessing the faith through art and word. AdCrucem.com.
Metro East Lutheran High School in Edwardsville, Illinois, engages young adults in a Christ-centered environment, delivering academic excellence and spiritual growth to develop Christian leaders for tomorrow. We provide a Christ-focused alternative to public high schools. Many of our students receive tuition assistance. To help us provide tuition assistance to more students, go to melhs.org and click on the giving page, or call me, Dr. J. Krause, principal, at 618-656-0043.
Steadfast Lutherans. People who believe that traditional Lutheran preaching, liturgy, and hymnody continue to deliver Christ crucified for sinners today. The Reformation attempted to return the Church's focus on what we do for God back to a focus on what God does for us, that Christ died for our sins in accordance with the Scriptures. Some things never change. The gospel is still under attack from inside and outside the Church. To see how Lutheran doctrine and practice preserve the gospel, visit steadfastlutherans.org.
It was the day after Christmas in 1538 when family and friends who were gathered around Luther's table heard him say, "There is no finer gift that a parent can give to a child than an education in the liberal arts." For over 100 years, St. Paul's Lutheran School in Brookfield, Illinois, has been emphasizing the six chief parts and the seven liberal arts, providing classical education in the Lutheran tradition. Visit our website at spbrookfield.org or call 708-485-0650.
Smartest listeners in radio. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Christ Lutheran, Jackson, Mississippi. Prince of Peace Lutheran, San Diego, California. Trinity Lutheran, Tryon, North Carolina. Our Redeemer Lutheran, Dallas, Texas. Calvary Lutheran, Yuma, Arizona. St. Paul Lutheran, Milford Center, Ohio. Peace Lutheran, Chehalis, Washington. Christ Lutheran, Noblesville, Indiana. Our Redeemer Lutheran, Lexington, Kentucky. And St. James Lutheran, Baltimore, Maryland. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, click support, and print the one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll publicize your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. Issuesetc.org. Click support. The Issues Etc. 300.